This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Welcome to another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. Thank you for joining me, and thank you for sending me your comments, topics of interest, questions. I welcome them all. You can email me to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. And as you know, that email is for all Intelligent Medicine podcast questions as well. Dr. Hoffman and I do a weekly Q&A with me, yours truly, and that's the destination for questions as well. Radioprogram@AOL.com. And here we are in the thick of summer, which I love. Anyway, I want to talk to you about some science updates and some interesting case reports here. We've got a case report. And this comes to us from SpectraCell. A high dose of vitamin B1, which is thiamine, clears up 26 years of painful headaches. Wow, that's really something. In this case report, a 41-year-old man who had been suffering from cluster headaches since the age of 15 years old was treated with high-dose vitamin B1, thiamine. He had been diagnosed with cluster headache at a neurological center in Italy. His first headache occurred at age 15, shortly after a motorcycle accident, and they increased in frequency over the years with acute pain and intensity that significantly compromised his quality of life. Wow, so he had a motorcycle accident, was likely a head injury, and now he's got these residual headaches. Although the patient would experience some headache-free months over the years, in January of 2016, the headache clusters began occurring daily with no pain-free period for an entire year. The patient had been treated with sumatriptan, a commonly prescribed drug for cluster headaches, which did not work. He had also been prescribed prednisone, although this didn't alleviate the pain either. Prednisone is the most powerful anti-inflammatory, as if you're a listener to these podcasts, you probably already know this. In December of 2016, he was given oral high-dose vitamin B1. Initially, the dose was 250 milligrams, and then it was increased to 750 milligrams after a few days. Within 10 days, the headache pain disappeared. He continued the vitamin B1 daily and indefinitely. Interestingly, the neurological center requested that he stop the vitamin B1 in order to test whether the headaches would come back. He refused this request, citing his reluctance to re-experience his headache pain. However, in May of 2017, which was 5 months after the B1 treatment started, the patient forgot his B1 while on vacation. Wow, I'm just thinking, if I were him, I would scramble to the nearest health food store to get some more thiamine. Anyway, no matter where I was. Anyway, so he forgot his B1, while he was on vacation. Within 48 hours of the last dose, a painful headache occurred. He resumed vitamin B1 therapy after his vacation and was able to reduce the dose to 500 milligrams with no recurrence of headaches to date. Wow. Okay. All right. Cluster headache is a painful condition in which very severe headaches occur with little warning and in clusters, meaning several headaches will occur in a short period of time. Patients of cluster headache have very little or no warning when they occur, unlike migraine, which may gradually build in intensity. So this is an important distinction between migraine headache and cluster headaches. Classified as a neurological condition, cluster headache is characterized by very severe and intense pain around the eye, often on only one side of the head. Some researchers suggest that the role vitamin B1 plays in energy metabolism, brain function, and pain modulation make it a potential therapy for this rare neurological disorder. Wow. Well, I'm going to be thinking about this next time I see a client or I have a client who has cluster headache as opposed to migraine. Let me tell you a little bit, though, about migraine. And I've discussed migraine on podcasts before, but just a reminder, riboflavin is the important B vitamin in migraine as opposed to B1, which is thiamine. Of course, neither would hurt, right? No matter what type of headache. So riboflavin, which is vitamin B2, as well as butterbur, feverfew, magnesium, lots of magnesium. So where do we find vitamin B1? We find it in pork, in organ meats, in brown rice, in brewer's yeast, in blackstrap molasses. What does B1 do? Helps with carbohydrate conversion, breaks down fats and protein, digestion, nervous system, skin, hair, eyes, mouth, liver, immune system. And what are the symptoms and problems of having a low thiamine? Heart, age-related cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, fatigue. Okay, very interesting case study here. And this is in Case Reports in Neurological Medicine, the April 2018 issue, and it's called Oral High-Dose Thiamine Improves the Symptoms of Chronic Cluster Headache. Here's another clinical update. Vitamin B3, which is niacin, may lower a dangerous type of lipoprotein. In a large clinical study called AIM High, is the acronym for Atherothrombosis Intervention in Metabolic Syndrome with Low HDL, High Triglycerides, and Impact on Global Health Outcomes. That's a mouthful. So that's what AIM High stands for. This is the study. Researchers evaluated the impact of extended-release niacin, which is vitamin B3, on blood lipids. In a previous review of patients in this AIM-High trial, niacin showed no benefit to statin-treated patients when analyzed as a whole group. However, in a subsequent analysis, niacin appeared to benefit patients who had high triglycerides, over 200 milligrams per deciliter of triglycerides, and very low HDL, less than 32 mg per DL. Which is a feature of metabolic syndrome, high triglycerides, low HDL. That is some of the criteria for diagnosing metabolic syndrome. In this analysis, the authors sought to find out the specific changes in lipoproteins that conferred the benefits seen in the subset of patients with high triglycerides and low HDL. Interesting. Lipoprotein particles were analyzed on 2,457 participants in the AIM-HI trial to establish baseline values, and again, after 1 year of treatment with extended-release niacin. Those taking niacin had higher HDL after 1 year, which is a good outcome because, you know, HDL is the supposed good cholesterol, the garbage truck. You want a bigger garbage truck. In addition, the analysis of lipoprotein subfraction showed that this benefit, which was specific to people with high triglycerides and low HDL, was likely due to the reduction in remnant lipoproteins, also known as RLP, remnant lipoprotein. This unique lipoprotein is particularly harmful because, unlike LDL particles, which have to undergo oxidation before they can be taken into the arterial intima, RPL lipoproteins can be readily transformed into foam cells, which is what compromises arterial plaque. In fact, RLP, did I say RPL before? It's RLP, remnant lipoprotein, is one of the four major risk factors cited by the National Cholesterol Education Program that contribute to heart disease. This paper suggests that the benefit seen in patients taking niacin was due to a reduction in this particularly harmful lipoprotein called RLP. This was in the Journal of Clinical Lipidology, the May 2018 issue. And it's called Relationship Between Lipoprotein Subfraction Cholesterol and Residual Risk for Cardiovascular Outcomes, a Post-Hoc Analysis of the AIM-HI Trial. The reason I'm giving you the citation at the end, the journal, so forth, at the end of is if you're interested in reading more about what I'm telling you about today, there it is. You can go to PubMed, you could look it up. You can go to the Institute of Medicine, get it, however, and through whatever subscriptions you may have to get it. Another clinical update, diagnosis of amino acid deficiency diseases gain attention. So amino acid deficiency is gaining attention here. In this review, the challenges with diagnosis of diseases caused by defects in amino acid synthesis are evaluated. Specifically, deficiency diseases of four amino acids, serine, glutamine, proline, and asparagine, are thoroughly reviewed. The authors explain that, unlike commonly recognized inborn errors of metabolism that cause elevated levels of metabolites that are easily detected in blood or urine, diseases caused by defects in amino acid synthesis do not cause a rise in metabolites that can be quantified via diagnostic testing. So, unlike the things that you could be born with, these inborn errors of metabolism that will easily be shown in blood or urine, the diseases caused by defects in the synthesis of amino acids don't cause a rise in metabolites. And these particular amino acids that are mentioned here, serine, glutamine, proline, asparagine, they're not necessarily on the list of essential amino acids, which is interesting, but some of them may be essential, may be conditionally essential amino acids. Anyhow, so in fact, the authors emphasize that amino acid synthesis defects may cause low, not high, values of metabolites or even completely normal levels, making diagnosis particularly difficult. However, the authors point out that although the four amino acid synthesis defects are in seemingly unrelated metabolic pathways, they tend to have clinical similarities, namely neurological manifestations like seizure, mental disabilities, or microcephaly, which is smaller than normal head size in infancy. That is microcephaly. The authors state that in many cases of amino acid deficiency defects, the plasma or the cerebral spinal fluid are non-informative, posing a real diagnostic challenge. For example, in serine deficiency diseases, they state that analysis of urine amino acids to diagnose serine deficiency is not helpful because, for still unclear reasons, amino acid excretion is normal in patients. Interestingly, the glutamine synthesis deficiency, the authors note, that the synthesis defect was manifested in lymphocytes. Finally, the authors explain similar diagnostic challenges in asparagine deficiency. So, the authors of this review conclude that a paradigm shift in how inborn errors of metabolism are diagnosed is happening, requiring further development of functional assays for these amino acid disorders. We may have to completely change the approach on not just the diagnosis of inborn errors of metabolism, but these others. The synthesis, the defect in synthesis of particular amino acids and what they can mean and how it can make diagnosis quite difficult. This was in the Journal of Inherited Metabolic Disorders in 2017. Amino acid synthesis deficiencies is the name of that article. Okay, next one. High-dose vitamin C kills liver cancer cells, according to a study. Now, before I even start to tell you about this, we know for a fact that high-dose vitamin C kills a lot of cancer cells. Dr. Hoffman, in his career of giving IV vitamin C, which he's no longer doing, but when he did, was very beneficial in keeping in helping to slow down the progression of cancer, or maybe even arrest the progression of cancer. My father had similar IV treatments of vitamin C, which was shown to keep his tumor intact at the time. This was a long time ago. This was back in the late 1990s. Vitamin C can kill a whole lot of cancer cells. And you know, Linus Pauling, the father of vitamin C, I really want to say, of the Linus Pauling Institute, he succumbed to, I believe it was prostate cancer in his 90s. And people say, well, see that? He was taking all this vitamin C and he died. But, you know, the real question to ask is, if he hadn't been taking all this high-dose vitamin C, and, you know, he was taking, I believe, as much as 10 grams, 10,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C, which can be hard to take orally. It's got to be buffered and all of that. You would imagine if he did not take such dosing of vitamin C for years and years, that he might have succumbed to cancer earlier than in his 90s. Anyway, so high-dose vitamin C kills liver cancer cells, according to a study. A liver cancer center in Shanghai, China, investigated the effect of pharmacological doses of vitamin C on liver cancer cells in a recent study. High vitamin C concentrations given intravenously induce cell death in liver cancer cells, in particularly liver cancer stem cells. Oh, wow. Talk about getting to the source of cancer. Cancer stem cells. That's where vitamin C was found to be targeting. In 613 liver cancer patients who had had a liver resection, meaning part of the liver was removed, retrospective data showed that the administration of intravenous vitamin C was linked to improved prognosis. Wow. The key protein needed to actively import vitamin C into a cell called SVCT2, which is the acronym for sodium-dependent vitamin C transporter 2, was highly expressed in liver cell cancer, in liver cancer stem cells. Wow. So this protein, SVCT2, was needed to actively transport this vitamin C into the liver cancer stem cells. This means that the high doses of vitamin C were preferentially taken up by the liver cancer stem cells, which actually increased intracellular oxidative stress in these cells by altering the oxidative balance, creating DNA damage, and ultimately causing cell death. That means cell death of the cancer cells, you understand me, right? As a result, high doses of vitamin C impaired tumor growth and eradicated liver cancer stem cells. The author suggests that vitamin C may be a, quote, novel therapeutic strategy, end quote, for liver cancer treatment. Wow. More good news about vitamin C, more evidence showing the beneficial, astounding effect of vitamin C. This is in Nature Partner Journals Precision Oncology. That's Nature Partner Journals Precision Oncology, the January 2018 issue. And the article is called Vitamin C Preferentially Kills Cancer Stem Cells in the Hepatocellular Carcinoma via SVCT2. Wow, good stuff. I love bringing you these updates. It's great to keep on our toes and learn about the new and exciting things we're finding out in science, other therapies, other ways to first do no harm, if we can treat with nutrition, all the things that we can, all the medical conditions and symptoms that we can take care of with nutrition. The more that we can do that, the better practitioners we become. Because there's virtually no side effect to any such thing as medical nutrition therapy, right? I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.